Hi, and welcome to the Send Mum Club podcast. This is a parenting podcast with a difference because it is just for mums of children with SEND. And yes, there might be some dads listening as well, so shout out to you. I'm your host, Gemma. Welcome along. Thank you so much for listening. Hi to you if it's your first time. Maybe you found us through the guest's Instagram, who I'll get onto her more in a minute. She is an amazing woman. But I actually just wanted to share two stories with you at the beginning of this week's episode. So my day job and my background is that I'm a radio presenter. So I'm on the radio in Liverpool every morning, which means that I was on the radio the day after the horrific incident at the end of the LFC victory parade on Bank Holiday Monday, which was a funny day to be on the radio. It kind of felt sad and we all had very heavy hearts because of what had happened. But we were getting some really nice messages and one really stuck out to me and I thought I'd share it with you because it's a really beautiful story of somebody being really understanding of a child with additional needs. So there was a lady messaged in, I think her name was Nikki. She might listen to this podcast actually, I don't know, she didn't say. But she messaged in to say that she was on the street where the incident happened. And the police started shouting at everybody to move out of the way, understandably. And she said, in her words, that her son had an autistic meltdown and was rooted to the spot and crying and wouldn't move. This is in a situation where it's scary, it's noisy, people are panicking and don't know what's going on. And she said that a policeman came over and instead of just trying to rush them out of the way, he took the time to sit down on a chair and explain to her son very calmly what was happening. And I mean, in an age appropriate way, I'm guessing, and why it was important that he moved. And I just thought, isn't that lovely that people in that situation, in a chaotic situation, would still take the time to sit down and try to make a child feel more at ease. So I really wanted to share that with you because it really touched me and I thought that was really, really lovely. And the other story that I wanted to share with you is just how chaotic my week has been. I think it's nice to share the times when you don't get it right. Normally, I'm quite an organized person. For the last week, for whatever reason, that has gone completely out of the window. So Leo, my son, and the dog, Dolly, went to stay with my in-laws for the bank holiday weekend because we went to Radio 1's big weekend and we weren't going to be here. So it was like, yes, do you know what? The older two were at their dad's. I've got a weekend off. I feel free and young again. And actually, turns out I can't do 2 days in a row anymore because I'm too old. Anyway, that's not the point. So the baby wasn't here and I checked my diary and I saw that Leo had a physio appointment with his physio, Georgia, who's lovely, at home. And I love the fact that we can do his physio at home because it's just easier for everybody, isn't it? So I'd noticed this in my diary. I'd planned my day around it and she even messaged me about 2 hours before saying, hi, just checking that I'm still okay to come and do the physio at 3:30. And I started to reply going, oh yeah, but we're having some painting done in our lounge. So we'll have to do it in our kitchen, which is quite small and there isn't enough room. I was literally typing these words and then I went, oh shit, the baby's not here and won't be back till tomorrow. So yeah, I was planning a physio session for Leo when Leo was about 2 hours away in a different part of the country. So well done me. It's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, there's lots of plates spinning and we're all going to drop one at some point. Anyway, I just thought I'd share my parenting fail for this week. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about amazing women that I have on to share their stories. And this week, my guest is Megan. Now, this is going to be a bit of a different chat because Megan's daughter, Nellie, has MLD. Now, I have let Megan in this chat explain exactly what that stands for and what it means because I didn't want to get that wrong. But I can tell you that it's terminal. So this obviously is an emotional chat. We've had lots of conversations on this podcast about receiving a diagnosis and that being life-changing and going through the acceptance of what that means and finding a new way of living. But this really is on a whole new level to that. It's literally every parent's worst nightmare, isn't it? So in this chat, we talk about the journey to Nellie's diagnosis and how that happened, because this isn't a diagnosis that you get at birth. We talked about how Megan and her partner dealt with that news and their decision to have another baby. And actually, what I found really interesting about this chat is we talk about how the genetic testing works once you've made that decision to have another baby. We talk about the amazing bucket list that they're ticking off for Nelly and how kind people have been in terms of helping them achieve those things, and why sharing Nelly's journey and their journey as a family on Instagram is a really beautiful, special thing for Megan. So like I said, this is an emotional one, but there's some really beautiful parts of this conversation that I think that you're really going to love. So let's get into it. Megan, thank you for joining me, but not only thank you to you, but I know you've basically had to kick your family out of the lounge. So also thank you to them.
I've actually come in the bedroom in the end because they were still eating their dinner. They got home late.
Oh, okay. I feel less bad now.
Yeah, so I'm in the bedroom, so it's fine.
Okay, that's good. We're having some decorating done at the minute, so we've not been able to use half our house at the minute, and it's a nightmare,
It really is. We've been renovating our house for 7 years. And there is four of us in one bedroom.
Oh my God, that's making me feel quite stressed because we're considering moving and doing a renovation. But that 7 years has just put me off.
Oh my gosh, yeah. If you could see any other part of this room, you'd be horrified because it's just piled high, like just of all, everything's everywhere because there's nowhere to put anything. It's,
well, what I can see looks very calm and serene.
I know, this is probably the only block of the whole room.
Right, so Megan, I wanted to get you on to talk about your daughter, Nelly. So you've got two children, haven't you? How old are they?
Nelly's 5 and a half and Ozzy's just turned two.
And it's Nelly you're here to talk about. So first of all, will you just tell me a little bit about her? Like, what's she like?
So she's the strongest, most resilient human being, I think, that has ever lived. She loves music and being outside. And she just is just calm. She's just very special, but she always has been, like, since the moment she came out. She just had this energy. But she's just gorgeous.
Oh, I love that. So if she's five, was she a COVID baby?
She was a COVID baby. She's put us through it in every kind of way possible. Yeah, she arrived 3 months before COVID. We got locked down with COVID. So it was like a really different experience to parenting. Anyway, because obviously we didn't see anyone for the first year. But she was 3 months. She was born in December.
I always remember during COVID seeing new mums, you know, like when we were allowed out for our however many, kind of, was it like 20 minutes a day or something? I always remember seeing new mums with prams, feeling really sorry for them, that they, it must have felt really isolating, that.
I actually had a really lovely time because we were renovating then as well. I went and stayed with my mum in a tiny village in Wiltshire where those restrictions, there's so few people in the village, you could walk for like 5 hours and no one would see you anyway.
Oh, wow,
so
lovely.
We just, so I actually had a really lovely time just with my mum and the baby.
That does sound nice, actually.
It was heavenly, it really was.
And no homeschooling as well, which is always...
No homeschooling, exactly.
Always good. So would you mind talking to me about Nelly's condition and just explaining exactly what it is? Because I don't want to do it and get it wrong.
No, that's fine. So she has, I can never say this, I'm dystlexic, so it's a nightmare for me, metrochromatic leukodystrophy.
That's why I didn't want to say it.
For someone who is dyslexic, it's probably the worst named condition. It's called MLD for short, and it's a horrible disease. Basically, your child appears relatively, I hate the word normal, but it's for the sake of this, developing normally. They just tend to have like a leg that's like a funny foot until they're about 2 and a half. And so basically she has, it's a genetic condition that both me and my partner carry. So there's a 1 in 4 chance of our baby having it. And it means that she has an enzyme in her liver that attacks her brain. And it's a terminal condition. They normally only live between 5 and 8 years. And it basically attacks the brain until it destroys them. It's a horrible, horrible disease. So so she was, we'd noticed signs because she wasn't walking. She never walked, but in every other way she developed normally. She spoke beautifully. All of her understanding was great. Her fine motor skills were fine. It was just her gross motor skills. So we started having brain scans and things. And at 2 and a half, we got her diagnosis. So that was in the May. By August, she could no longer move, talk, eat or drink.
Oh my goodness, it that's was, so quick.
Yeah, it was insane. We didn't really, it was, yeah, just like that. We just, everything was gone. But in the time you're processing it, what's happening, you're also grieving what you're losing so quickly. So you don't really have any time to catch up with anything that's happening.
So yours is obviously a different story to the other mums that I've spoken to so far on the podcast, because that diagnosis means something completely different. It's not just getting used to a new way of living, is it? I mean, I can't imagine somebody saying that.
So we were in massive shock, and obviously we were grieving. She was losing things that we'd watched her learn how to do. So it's a really different thing. So you're grieving that, like hearing, I remember saying to the doctors, so I'm going to hear mummy for the last time. I love you, mummy, for the last time, and that's going to be it. And it really was like that. It was just like, within, you know, like you just lost things, and each day you'd wake up and you'd think, is this going to be the last time she does this or says this? And it really went like that. Like it just went from one day to another, and it was like gone. And it was just, yeah, shock for like the first 6 months, just deep, deep grief. But also like just wanting to like live, and also like because you know things are going to be lost, as well as her life, you know, like not that was, we didn't know how long we'd even have with that. They made that sound like that was going to happen quite rapidly too. We just were like, right, we have to like do everything, make the most of everything, live like every moment as quickly as we could. So it sort of was like a double-edged sword of like suddenly finding this really beautiful way of living, but also being so heartbroken, like not being able to even breathe sometimes from the pain of it all. So it was hell. I don't know how else to describe it. It was hell.
So I guess that you've had to really concentrate on living in the present.
Yeah, it's given me that as, and it's the best way to live.
Well, yeah, because I suppose you don't want to waste any. It's so easy, isn't it, in life to fall into that trap of like scrolling on your phone, and I know nobody's perfect. I'm not on my phone when I'm with my kids, but you are, you know, it's work or it's Instagram or it's whatever. But for you, I guess, more than anybody else, must feel like such a waste.
It does. But I will say this, and I realised this, like at first I was really like, oh my God. And then there still is points, you know, like at 8 o'clock where I just want them to both go to bed still. I'm not, you know, like it doesn't mean like I'd love to say, yeah, you're just like, oh, I just want to be with them every second. But you still don't. You still sometimes think, oh God, I just need 5 minutes. So I think, because we're just human, aren't we? But it really does. It puts the things in perspective of like, especially now my son does things. I mean, I was really in the moment with Nelly anyway, because I think of COVID, everything was such a slow pace of life. So I think we all learned to live a lot slower, didn't we? Yeah, there was no racing. So I'd already had that. But like with Ozzy, for example, like I'm always like, let's just stop in this moment a little bit longer, because they just grow so quickly, don't they? And you miss things quickly, but also because those things that I've lost, I just cherish them so much, watching him do them.
Thank you for saying that you have moments where you're like, I want them to go to bed.
Yeah, I think, like to make a point of that.
Yeah, but I think it's important, isn't it? Because yes, that's not how you want to feel. Like on paper, you're going, I wouldn't think that. But yeah, but of course you do. And I think maybe that's exactly the kind of thing, if somebody else is listening who is in a similar position to you, might feel those things and then go, oh my God, I'm a terrible person.
Yeah.
Nobody else in this situation would feel that, but probably everybody does.
I think everyone, I love being a mum, like being with my kids, they're like my favourite thing in the world, but that doesn't mean that I don't, you know, you need to recharge, don't you? And if you're not charged, and also like we get so overstimulated as mums, I think that's like, because you'll get touched out and there's so many things on your mind to do and you just need that like that 5 minutes, don't you, sometimes? And I think even when your child is terminally ill and you don't want to waste a second, you cannot help with sometimes just feeling like, if I don't take 5 minutes, my brain is going to explode. Yeah. So I think, yeah.
So in terms of like a timeline, when you got the diagnosis, had you already had Ozzy?
No, I'm quite like, I don't think this would have been a lot of people's way through it, but I immediately went, I have to get pregnant again. In lots of ways, it was probably a strange idea because it was a really strange pregnancy, and you also go through genetic testing, and it's, you know, like it's quite a traumatic thing to do. But I was just like, I have to, because they sort of made it sound like she would be gone by four, and I was like, I need, and like Tom, my partner, was like, if we don't, you need something really strongly to live for. So we just did it straight away. Yeah. And we tend to get pregnant quite quickly. So within a month, I was pregnant with Ozzy.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah.
I can understand that mindset, though, I think, of feeling like that was the right thing to do at that point.
And I think it was. It just, it was a lot of things. So like when I gave birth, I didn't grieve really for the whole 9 months I was pregnant because I was so scared of putting that trauma on him. Like I'm still very conscious that his house has to feel so safe because he's also going to lose his, you know, like a member of his family. So we need to be so conscious of that. And I was, during the whole pregnancy, I was aware of that. So then when I gave birth, the grief that I felt, I didn't enjoy that beginning, you know, I didn't have a newborn bubble because the grief came out so heavily at that point because I'd held it in so much for most of the pregnancy.
That must have been coupled though with those new baby hormones all over the place, because I remember like when Leo was born, I mean, yes, we were dealing with a diagnosis as well.
Yeah.
But I solidly cried for 2 weeks. And that wasn't just because of a diagnosis. That was because of the hormones being wild.
And the lack of sleep. And it's all just a crazy, it's like a crazy concoction of delulu, I like to think of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. How is it then having a toddler, which is hard anyway, and, you know, they're all over the place. I sometimes think that toddlers are like tiny drunk people that aren't listening to you.
Yeah, like little narcissists. That's how they're like, it's like the most narcissistic stick you'll ever be in your whole life is when you're a toddler.
No, I completely agree. So how are you managing that with Nelly?
I always feel bad for saying this, but I really don't find it, I don't find it very hard. She's so easy. She's such a dream. She always was. And to be honest, he does so much for her. Like she's sick like at least once a day. And he just runs to the cupboard and gets towels and things to start and just starts cleaning it up. He's done that since he was about 14 months old. He just is so in tune with the whole house. And like, I don't drive. So everywhere we go, we walk, we do a lot of walking. He has to just walk along. So I've just been very blessed. I'm sure he's going to be an awful teenager or something because they've both been very easy. And we want another one as well. So I think we're probably a bit crazy.
It sounds like you're raising like a really beautiful soul there. If that's in his nature to go and help, that's so lovely.
Yeah, he sort of came out like a little grown man. He never really seemed to be like a baby. And he's just... yeah, always looks after her and just sort of knows what's going on and is very conscious. He's like our little joy pot. He comes in and makes everyone laugh when we, you know, like when we're really low, he sort of picks up on it and turns on like the comedy show.
That's nice though, because I guess in dark moments, there's a reason to, even if you're faking it, isn't it, to be
happy. You can't not fake when toddlers are being funny. You can't not find them funny, can you? So exactly that. Even when it's like, oh, this is agony, he'll come in and do something and like me and Tom will look at each other and just smile and be like, we can't not. And I wouldn't ever not want to smile at him, but you know, like, but you feel it rather than it just be like a, like you said, like a fake smile, like pretending it. You feel it because it is funny. You can't help but laugh.
That's
despite
so
everything.
Nice. So I'm asking for myself and also for other people who might not know, what does that genetic testing look like? Because there will be a lot of people who have a child with a genetic condition that then obviously would like to go on to have another baby. I don't know what that looks like. Like, what process do you have to go through, or did you choose to go through?
So I love to talk about this because I shared it on my Instagram the other day. The route, there's two routes you can take. And one of the routes, which I'll explain, which is the route we chose to take with Ozzy, and we are hoping to try again for another baby at the end of the year, we'll take, that a lot of people have a lot of opinions on. And well, I'll explain. So there's two routes. So basically you can do IVF, I can never remember, it's PGT or PGD, but you basically, the embryos are created and then you have IVF. So they are putting an embryo in you that it hopefully doesn't have both of your genetic default genes. So obviously the baby just has to have, if it has one, I'm a carrier, Tom's a carrier, Ozzy's actually a carrier. So we're all fine as long as we don't meet someone else like me and Tom have done. And then you have affected, which is 1 in 4 chance of having an affected baby. So that's, you can either have IVF. If you have a child that is going to die, like Nelly, so with Ozzy, they offered us, you can have IVF for free with the NHS in the UK. for one baby. They will give you one living child. That's how they describe it, if your child is not going to live. So that's how you can go down that route. So if you wanted another child after that, you'd have to pay, which is fine. And then the other route is you do it naturally and you hope and you pray that the baby isn't affected. Because in our case, the diagnosis is so extreme. You know, it's a different, you know, like there's obviously variations of diagnosis where some people would take that risk without having, think their child wouldn't suffer enough that they would want to keep them. But with...
Well, like Down syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different scale. Like, yes. Obviously... Terminal illness to me is really like when, for example, when they asked us about Downs, I was like, I don't even need you to test for it, because if they have Downs, that's not an option. We would keep that baby. Yeah. But with MLD, we had to, even when I was pregnant, so as soon as I got pregnant with Bozzy, I had to book my termination. And then you have to go for CVS testing where long needle in utero. Oh, it's awful. It's awful. And this is why I think it's so important to talk about, because so many people do not talk about the fact that termination might be an option, because they carry so much shame about that. Yeah. And I understand why. I didn't even want to book it. I begged them not to make me book it, but you have the CVS testing at 14 weeks. You wait a week for your results. And then they're saying they don't want you to be waiting any longer to have the termination, because after 16 weeks, obviously things start changing and how that happens. So they want you to get in there as soon as possible. So for the first 16 weeks of your pregnancy, you don't feel pregnant. You can't connect to that baby.
You can't allow yourself to think that you're pregnant, because then you might not be.
But you have to have, I had to have 4 scans of him before I'd even got to that stage of finding my results, because they have to check where you are, what stage you're at all the time. And he was so wiggly, and all he would do is wiggle around on the screen, and it was just awful. But I was under so much shock with what was happening with Nelly, because it was so soon after. I don't think I ever processed how awful it was. But the chances for us are 70, the chances are 75% of you getting the good result, the non-affected. Well, a carrier or non-affected. So for me, those felt like good odds. 1 in 4, yeah. So if you say someone's 75%, and I'm like an eternal optimist, so I'm always hopeful. But yeah, it's a really hard route. And the CVS testing itself can cause miscarriage. So that's like a really scary thought, apparently. But I did hear, though, that in the UK, our doctors are so well trained that the rates of what it being dangerous are much lower than in a lot of places. And like you can't pick up your children for like 3 days or anything, because they don't want you to rupture. And it just sort of feel like you've like, oh, so MLD's taken that fun away as well. You know, the fun of having a baby, like, and being pregnant, because you don't really get to really until quite a far way in. And then you have to accept. And it's like, okay, now I can keep this baby. So you sort of get taken right back to the beginning of pregnancy, where you're sort of like, okay, I'm pregnant. I need to get my head around that. It's like, yeah. It's really strange. But I put it up on Instagram the other day, because someone, I did like a Ask Me Anything, and someone said, do you want another baby? And I said, yeah. And I said, I'd really love to share the whole process, because like you said, people don't know the process. I didn't know the process until I did it. But I know I'll get quite a lot of abuse about if I have to terminate. I know I will. And I had so many mums reach out to me and said, I terminated because my baby, like yours, has a terminal disease. Like, I would have had a terminal disease. And they were like, I told no one. We didn't tell our family. We didn't tell our friends. We just kept it to ourselves because we felt so upset about it. And that just broke my heart that people were having to feel like that.
I can't really wrap my head around why somebody would give somebody else abuse for that, though.
Oh, I know, but it's... You know what Instagram's like. There's constant things. People just are like, I don't understand why you wouldn't have IVF. And I understand why they say that, but there's many factors as to why that wouldn't necessarily work for our family or for me. And I know, but then you feel like you have to justify yourself. But equally, I'd love to share it, because exactly what you just said, people don't know the process, and it makes you feel very alone. It's a very lonely sort of process, because there is a lot of shame around what you might have to do that you don't want to do. Obviously, no one wants to do that in a million years.
And why, if you don't mind me asking, why did you choose that route over the IVF?
So the IVF was a year wait, so that was one of the reasons I needed to do it quickly.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely awful on hormones.
Same.
I could just feel, and I, with the grief, I knew it would make me really, like, when I'm coming on my period, my grief goes like through the roof. Like, I can handle things, period coming, wild, I'm desperately sad. And I just thought I'd put my family through, like back then I thought I'll put myself through that. Now I feel like I'd put my family through that. Like I said, I'm really hopeful. 75% feels like, to me, like good odds. We get pregnant really easily, generally, touch wood. Like, so, you know, that's, and it, the, you know, the IVF, the chances of getting pregnant are much lower. So you, like, naturally. And I just, and I'm going up to London all the time, like trying to, we can, can't get childcare for Nels. She's so, like, her medical needs are so complex.
Yeah.
But those are all the reasons why it just doesn't sit right. And I just sort of think I'm just so hopeful that I'd be like, why would it not happen? You know, like, why would we not get a good result? But then that's, I'm sure if I go, have to go through the bad, I'd feel very differently about it. But it, for now, it just feels, yeah, like the right sort of way.
It's strange though, isn't it? Because when you said 1 in 4, my head immediately thought, God, that's quite high. And when you said 75%, which is the other way, it sounds different, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Really different.
Yeah, you think, all right, that sounds good. Like if someone said I've got a 75% chance of something happening, yeah, I'd be like, yeah, those odds are in my favour.
Yes.
You're right, 1 in 4 feels a little bit like, whoa.
I've never thought of it like that before. But yeah, you're right. A 75% chance, you would take those odds. Well, I would anyway.
Mm, yeah.
But it's interesting to know, though, that there are those two options in yeah. that situation. So if anyone else is in a similar situation, then, you know, it's good that you've explained exactly how that works.
Yeah, and the IVF, like I say, it's free for you if you don't have a child that's going to live like into adulthood. So then they will give you it for free, but you just have to wait. The wait, I know, is still a year, because I know someone who's at the moment who's trying to apply for it. So it's still a year to get seen to start it, but it is there.
That's interesting. Yeah. So by the time that you would have even started that process of IVF, you already had your baby.
Yeah, by the time I would even started, I got the call after the baby. Yeah. And then we recently contacted them because we wanted to ask questions, because there's some sort of other earlier testing that apparently they've said not to do. And I'd waited 14 months to get the first phone call, like to try and think about having another baby.
Yeah.
So 14 months before we even got the call to start the conversation about testing, let alone IVF.
I saw on your Instagram, you did the trend that I did, which was the thing that everyone will have seen this. I'm not a TikTok girl, unfortunately. I'm too old.
No, I'm not TikTok. Yeah, me too.
So it's probably started on TikTok and then moved to Instagram, which is where I've seen it. This, she doesn't know it yet, but trend, which I know that you've done. I did it, and mine was me being pregnant, like standing in the mirror, stroking my bump. Like I saw this trend and I was like, I've got a video that, you know, I could post for that. And then after I'd done it, I looked back and it kind of got me watching it back. How did you feel seeing yours? And for people that don't know, I'm sure everybody's seen this, but the trend is like, oh, she doesn't know it yet, but in 3 days' time, like her husband's going to have had an affair and whatever. But obviously ours was related to our children. And it's the whole premise of it is that it's a video or a picture of you before you got the diagnosis or before this thing happened to you. How do you feel looking back, not necessarily specifically at that, but at pictures and videos of before you knew?
Oh, it took a long time. It was very painful. It was like exceptionally painful, because it was videos of her like talk. It was her doing the things she'd lost. So, you know, like watching videos, even 3 days ago, a video came up from 3 years ago today, and it was her losing her ability to sit up. So she was like slouching and she was talking and she was still laughing because she was amazing. Most of the children have to go on sedatives in the beginning because they're so distraught at the fact they're losing all these abilities. But she never had to. She was just smiled and laughed her way through it all. So she's like that. So she's like a wonder in that way. But even that video 3 days ago, we both were just like, oh. And it's just been sat within both of us because I made Tom watch it. I shouldn't have done really, but because it just feels like a different life. We lost that little girl. We can dress it up and. We've lost the version of her that was last year, because her disease, that's the way degenerative diseases work. They take them slowly, you know, they give them dementia, they make them, like with this, she'll eventually have dementia, be paralyzed, blind, deaf. It does everything. And so you're constantly losing a version of your child. So you're never like, and so that when I look at that little girl, I always just kiss my phone and just say like, I love you, because I feel like I've lost her, in all honesty. And I have, because that was a different that was a different Nelly. And then last year's a different Nelly. And when she goes, she'll be a different Nelly to all of those other versions, because the disease just is evil like that.
I mean, how do you cope with that?
I just feel really lucky for any time I have with her. I feel really lucky that I'm a mum, and I refuse to let what's happening make me feel anything other than lucky to have known her. I'm quite rebellious, and I think that's part of what manages me to like keep going like I do, because I think nothing will, like, I will fight my brain forever to feel lucky over unlucky, because I could have not had her, you know, like she could never have come into my life and I would never have met her. And I have to just think, I have to just be so grateful, yeah, that I've known her. And that's what keeps me going at times when I think, oh, this is really hard. I think, no, she's here for now. You can kiss her head and hold her hand, and that's enough.
That's such a beautiful, beautiful way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's the only way I can go, really.
Yeah. So you're doing a bucket list, aren't you? Talk to me about that, because this sounds lovely.
We've done quite a lot of it already. We've been very lucky. A lot of people have helped us out in lots of ways, and our nurse. There's just a few things left on there, really. But yeah, she's been skiing. She's done like sailing. She's been on like speedboats. She's been on a plane. She stayed in tree houses. She's fed rhinos. She's rode horses. And also like silly little, we're not silly, but things that we never thought we'd do, like go to the cinema, go to school, see her in like a school uniform. Like the day I saw her in a school uniform, because we didn't think she'd make it to school age. She only goes 2 days a week, but, and to a special need school, obviously, but even that was just like a massive bucket list tick, because I honestly thought we'd never see the day where she did anything like that. So I took her to the cinema for the first time 3 months ago, and the people in the cinema must have just thought what she was doing, because I was just like filming us like crying just watching Moana 2, because I was just like, I can't believe I'm here and getting to enjoy these things with her. But yeah, we've done a lot of lovely, amazing things with her. But it's the little things like that that mean the most.
And you've mentioned that people have helped, like in what kind of way?
So her hospice nurse is amazing. Hospice nurse lives for giving children like bucket list experiences, like not just, you know, like not the everyday ones, but like thinking, everyone said you can't do this, so let's find a way of making you do that. So she's helped us. We've had lots of people, like the Instagram's been amazing, lots of people reach out. Like we had a lady who had an alpaca farm, and she was like, can't bring her to the alpaca farm. We stayed at a hotel 3 weeks ago, and they, like, it was a beautiful hotel, and they got her all princess stuff. They met her at the train station with a bunch of flowers. Like they'd set out a princess dress and a tiara for her on the bed. That's one thing you really realise, is people are exceptionally kind. I know it feels like the world's at this horrible place at the moment, and but there's so many good people that will do anything to just put a smile on your face. So we've been really lucky in that way.
That's so nice to hear that people want to help like that, because you're right, it is easy to see the bad people at the minute, because I think they're louder than the nice people.
Yeah, it's not a great time at the moment.
No, not really.
But there's so many amazing people, and we really have met like so many of them. People constantly message me and say, can I send this to Nelly? Can we send a gift? Little kids wanting to send her pictures that they've drawn, or messages. It's gorgeous. Like you really are like, wow, this world is like full of like people who will do things, not selfishly, like they're genuinely going beyond that part. It's all completely selfless.
You were talking about videos coming up of this time last year, or, you know, videos from the past, and then being painful to watch, but maybe in a few years time, like all of these experiences, because I saw that video of in the hotel with the princess dress, and it was so beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Like,
yeah,
it was just perfect for a little girl, wasn't it? Like, an amazing experience.
Spot on. Yeah,
and I think in the future you've got these amazing memories, these lovely videos. And I was thinking that when I was looking down your Instagram, because you're documenting everything so beautifully,
you'll always
have that, won't you, to look back on?
Yeah, and that's sort of what it genuinely, because it was all, if you go back to like 2013, it's me like posing in tiny outfits, because obviously I was a lot younger, so that's what it's my whole life. People always I know, but you know, like people are always like, oh, this is Nelly. It's like, no, this isn't really Nelly's Instagram. This has just been how I've recorded things. And in the beginning, it was me showing the people, we had a GoFundMe, and it was me just showing everyone to try and say like, oh, thank you, this is what you've done for us. And then, like you say, it's kind of become for me now like this journal so that I can always look back and say, I did give her the most beautiful life. That's how I kind of see it. It's so precious to me now to think, if we had those times, we've got that, like, no, that was, you like you said, that we've got all these memories of what we did with her, like the life. So I can be like, she had a big life. It was short, but she had this massive life. And I've kind of got, yeah, not the evidence, but the reminders there that that absolutely happened, if I ever, you know, like, doubt myself.
And I always think that's something that's really nice about reels, because everyone kind of takes, you know, videos of their kids or whatever, but I think there's something about putting it together in a reel. It's almost like a trailer for a film, isn't it? It's like the best bits,
yeah,
of this day that we had, but put together in 90 seconds that you can watch, that will take you straight back there.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, like I always think of it like a collage. I love collaging.
Yeah.
So it's like a collage of, like, yeah, like of like her life. You forget like all of the things like you've done, and then like with the music and everything, it's just so emotive. It's lovely. It captures everything.
It really does. How have you found like finding peer support and community support?
So in this area, I don't really, obviously there's quite a lot of MLD. I've got great MLD mums that I talk to. I don't really use too much of the community stuff because I get a bit overwhelmed, you know, like I feel like I have to do things all the time and I'm not very good at that. So I'm not very good at being part of the community. So I have an amazing mum, and she's one of my best friends now, but she lives in Serbia, and our daughters would have been the same school age, and they were both diagnosed on the same day, and we found each other the day after through Instagram, and we've spoke every day since. So, and we're both on exactly the same journey, and we always say our hearts, her heart knows what my heart looks like inside, and vice versa, and no one else in the world really, you know, like any of our friends or family really understand it. So I have her, and we talk all the time, and so I've kind of got that. But beyond that, I quite like just sort of blowing on our own, really.
I think it's nice to hear somebody say that. There's almost an expectation,
yeah,
when you're in this world, that you have to have this big network of people, and I don't either. And sometimes I sit there and I'm like, am I doing this wrong? Am I getting this wrong? Should I be at, yeah, this, and should I be going to that, and should I have this network of people that I talk to all the time? And for me personally, I am trying to make friendships with people and meet up with them, because I want Leo to have, as he grows up, I want him to have friends
100%
where he, yeah, doesn't have to. I mean, I don't know how his little brain's going to work, because I'm not him, but I want him to have friends where he doesn't have to feel like he's trying to fit in.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. And it is, yeah, because, and that's the thing, like, for Nelly, she doesn't have friends her age, because obviously they, 5-year-olds don't understand why, yeah, she doesn't talk or move. And she lost all of her little friends in the beginning, who she had been friends with at 2.5. They didn't really understand why. And so I think 100% like what, that makes complete sense what you're saying. And I would want that for her as well. I feel like, again, if our situation was different, 100%. And I mean, the disability community is the most beautiful place, because everyone's just understands, don't they? And they're so open and kind.
Yeah.
It's like this beautiful place that, until you're part of, you don't in any way understand or make time. I didn't make enough time for it in my brain, to be honest. So I'm always so grateful to be a part of it now. But also, there's no one really in our situation locally. And I find the groups and things, I feel like everyone is on such their own path that sometimes it makes you feel like you have to question if you're doing things, if you should be doing it differently or this way. And I don't really like to feel like that with anything. I like to just sort of work on instinct, I think. So,
but I think also with my two older children, I wasn't friends with people just because they had babies.
Kid, exactly.
So I'm not going to be friends with people just because they have children with Down syndrome, in my case. Like, I'm trying to find people that I actually want to hang out
your
with
people,
because I like,
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they're still your people. Your kids just happen to have this amazing thing in common.
Exactly, yeah, that. Like I said, there's a couple of people that I'm kind of trying to forge those relationships with in real life. But yeah, it's more people for me on Instagram where...
Yeah, that you find them, don't you?
Yeah, and you can just kind of message. But then I guess it's not quite the same, is it, as being able to meet up and have a conversation with someone and look into somebody's eyes. Like, I bet you, yeah, wish that your friend wasn't, not like, in a different part of the world.
We say it all the time. And one day obviously neither of us can travel that far without our girls, and our girls can't travel. So we know when we see each other, it will be meeting each other in kind of the worst of situations. The only way we're going to ever be able to be together and be in that situation is because one of them has left and the other one has gone to see the other. Yeah, we would love to be near, and I feel like that, especially where she's in Serbia, and it's much harder there to be disabled than it is here, that I always feel, you know, like I would just want to pull her over and give her everything that we've got here, really.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to talk about, though, to acknowledge that not everybody has those huge support groups and loads of other, you know, send mums around them and people going through the same thing, because as we've just discussed, that isn't the case for everybody, and it doesn't mean that you're getting it wrong.
No, and also if you don't want to, like if you just are like, actually that's not for me, like you said, I don't want her disease to be the focus of like our friendship. It's exactly that. I want us to just, you know, them to be accepting of it to be part of everything, but it can't be the focus of it. Otherwise I'd start to feel like, I don't know, a bit icky probably.
I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast, though, because I think a podcast is a nice way to kind of dip into that on your own terms.
100%, yeah.
And just listen rather than participate. Yeah. If you know, if that's not your vibe, if that's not what you want to do. So hopefully there's a couple of people listening who that's resonated with. We always finish the podcast in the same way, with the two same questions. And the first one is, what is the best piece of advice you've been given?
Okay, this links in quite nicely with what we just said, actually, because the best piece of advice I was sort of given is that I don't have to say yes to everything. And it was in regards to like medical appointments. And so in terms of like saying like, you don't have to be part of the community if you don't want to. I also think I realized you don't have to say yes to like, you know, like in the beginning, especially of diagnosis, you are layered with hospital appointments and you feel like you have to go to everything. And especially for us, I just instantly said no to everything because I was like, we've got living to do. I don't know how much longer she's going to be able to do that. So I sort of, and I'm so glad someone said that to me. You don't have to say yes to everything, and you don't have to say yes to every medical decision. You know, that's still your child. You still have ultimate control. I don't like the word control, but you know, like ultimate, you can read things. So I think that was the best piece of advice, is trust what you think. If you don't want to say yes to going to the dietitian constantly because you don't feel it's necessary and you'd rather go to the park, then do that. If you don't feel like a medication's right for your child, then don't feel like you have to put them on it. Change the dosage, I just think that, like, take a bit back for yourself and give yourself that confidence to know that you know your child best and you can make those decisions for them with help, but the help doesn't have to overwhelm your life.
That's such an interesting point. I think that's great advice, so thank you for sharing that. The other question is, what do you wish, if anything, that you knew when you got Nelly's diagnosis?
That life wasn't over. I really thought life was over. You can't really walk into a room and walk out of it after being told your child's going to die quite rapidly without feeling like life's over, but life has not been over. Last year was one of the best years of our lives. We've had the most beautiful time with her, and there was so much living to do, and she did so many things that we thought she'd never be able to do. And I think just that, I wish I'd known that it wasn't the end of everything. It was a different beginning, and there'll be another beginning later on down the line that's much sadder, but it's just another beginning, and you decide how you travel on that journey. Like, no, you don't have to be made to feel like you have to be desperately anything. You can just be how you want to be. And yeah, we chose to live, and that's been amazing for us.
I absolutely love your whole outlook. I think that the way you speak about everything is absolutely amazing, and you seem like the strongest woman. I'm sure you get told that all the time, and I also am well aware that you don't have a choice, but I want to say it anyway. I think
that, yeah, I get, I know, I feel the same with people. I want to say it a lot of time too, so I get it, but I know what you mean.
So for people that aren't following you on Instagram, as discussed, not TikTok, just Instagram.
Not TikTok.
What is your Instagram handle? And I'll put this in the show notes.
I don't know.
Well.
That's why I'm sorry. I'm having to get my, I don't actually know. It's awful. It got changed. So it's Megan, Megan, dash. I don't know if that's an underscore. Oh, an underscore.
Yep.
Mama, M-U-M-M-A, and then underscore sunshine. We have been raising, in Nelly's name, that's part of her bucket list, money for her hospice, Chestnut Tree House. My goal for her life, I thought, to be five and have raised 50,000 would be amazing. And she is very close.
So if people would like to donate, then they can do that via, it's a Just Giving link, isn't it, that I've seen.
It's Just Giving, and it's for the hospice that her nurse has just gone on mat leave, but her nurse that we have had and who we love works with Chestnut Tree House.
Okay, well, I'll put your Insta handle and I'll also put that Just Giving link in the show notes for anyone that isn't following you or anyone that would like to donate. And again, Megan, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate you sharing everything with me. And I love watching your beautiful videos of your gorgeous little girl and little boy on Instagram. Yeah.
thank you for having me.
I don't know if you could tell, and I don't know if Megan could tell, because our videos to each other were a little bit grainy, but that made me cry about five times in that chat. I really appreciate Megan coming on and telling her story, and I think there were other questions that I had written down to ask her, but it's a different episode, isn't it? And it's a different chat to the kind of chats that I've had before, because obviously Nelly's condition is terminal, and Megan had messaged me. We'd chatted on Instagram briefly before, and she had said that she potentially would be happy to chat about end of life care. And I want this to be a safe, open, honest place, but also I just thought that might just be a bit too much and a bit too personal, because that is obviously the worst, worst thing that anybody as a parent could ever imagine having to think about for their child. So I'm quite happy that I left it there, but just in case you were thinking, oh, you know, you didn't go there, and that was a very conscious decision not to. So if you check the show notes, the Just Giving link is in there. The link to Megan's Instagram is in there, which I know I said in that episode, and I wasn't just saying it, like the videos she's posting are absolutely beautiful. If you aren't following her, please, please do. Nelly is such a beautiful little girl, and watching them tick things off their bucket list, I think, is just so special. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you would rate, review, give it 5 stars, subscribe, however it is that your podcast app works. Thank you again for listening to the Send Mum Club. If you aren't following us, you can do that at the Send Mum Club on Instagram, and I will see you back here next week.